The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. 10 minutes after 8, proud to bring on Jason Isaac. He's the CEO and founder of American Energy Institute. How you doing, Jason? Welcome.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, now you are from Texas and you are a former Texas representative. And do you ever get to the point where you're just thinking, ah, man, it is so great to be a red guy in a red state and able to just kind of not worry about what you say? Or is it that way until you get into Austin? I mean, how does that actually work in the state of Texas when it comes to...
Yeah, they call it the Austin the blueberry and the tomato soup. You know, it's this really blue, crazy, liberal, progressive city with incredibly bad policies and incredibly high prices of living that are driving people out to the suburbs. But it is great to live in Texas. I mean, we are a wonderful state. We're blessed with a surplus in our budget every 2 years, and this has happened.
A surplus? Really?
Yeah, a budget surplus. Huh. Our comptroller, who's our treasurer, just reported $20 billion in additional revenue. And this is what happens when you have a low tax burden. People get to keep more of their money. They go out and they buy things. They buy cars. They improve their homes. And that generates sales tax revenue for the state.
Yeah.
And so as long as we can keep our lights on and keep our grid up and running, our industry booming, the jobs are going to be there. And the revenue is going to continue to be there for the state.
Well, speaking of the energy grid, everybody remembers, what was it, a couple of winters ago, you guys just had just a hellacious meltdown because of the frigid temperatures that came in there. And we're battling with the same sort of policies in which states have gone all in on the green agenda. And you need power 24/7, but unfortunately, the renewables counting on Mother Nature to give energy when Mother Nature deigns to give it rather than when you need it. It's a real challenge. It almost killed people down in Texas. Has that been fixed yet? Just curious.
It did. Yeah. Hundreds of people lost their lives. And this is what we continue to see reporting. It's 40 times more dangerous, colder temperatures than they are warmer temperatures. Mm-hmm. More people lose their lives because of freezing to death, again, to the tune of 40-1. Freezing deaths are on the rise. The reports last year, I think in the United Kingdom, 5,000 people lost their lives because they didn't have access to affordable, reliable electricity and couldn't heat their homes. That's absolutely appalling. We've made some progress on the grid here in Texas, but the federal government continues to warn, and people don't realize, we just released some polling that almost two-thirds of the population is at an elevated risk for having rolling outages. And about that same percentage of people don't realize that they're at an elevated risk for rolling outages that could last hours. And that was really what happened in Texas, is they didn't begin the rolling outages soon enough, and power plants started tripping offline, and then they accidentally turned off gas supply. And it was just this unfortunate, colossal comedy of errors that did result in loss of life and a significant financial impact. But we've made some progress. We need to quit being so dependent on these unreliable variable sources of Chinese-made energy, wind and solar, that we continue to prop up with our tax dollars. And that is just un-American. It's not the right thing to do. I hope a new administration in D.C. can get rid of these subsidies. And that's, you know, the people that I work for, our energy producers in this country that oppose the subsidies, that want to get back to free markets and lower cost of energy.
All right. So you're, of course, American Energy Institute, AmericanEnergyInstitute.com. So your deal is, I guess, am I assuming that you're working with oil and gas and the coal producers, or, you know, what people do you work with there?
Yeah. And nuclear as well. We advance policies that promote free markets. And I've sat at congressional roundtables before and with other trade organizations in the energy space. And I'm the only one that advocates for policies that would reduce the cost of energy, that would actually reduce the cost of a barrel of oil, that would lower electricity costs, because the human flourishing connected to that lower cost energy outweighs every other benefit. And so it's just absolutely incredible to be able to represent energy producers that support free markets for the benefit of mankind.
Jason, is there actually an open hatred of humanity when you go to these Capitol roundtables and you're talking about the price of energy? And I remember when former President Obama ended up talking about the price of electricity will needs to triple. It will be tripling, and it needs to be happening. And I was scratching my head about that, and it just strikes me as someone who is either really unplugged or there's a more sinister agenda in play. How do you see that?
There really is. The entire Green New Scam, the Green Movement, is a very Malthusian effort at its worst. You look at the World Economic Forum, who has invited people like Jane Goodall to speak before them and present to them and saying that we need, in order to save the planet, we need to get back to a population that we had in the 1500s. That's a 95% reduction from today.
Okay, well, who volunteers to die? Well, who's going to volunteer to die, I guess, would be the question coming from that group, right?
In most cases, you won't find anybody that's doing that. Maybe some people where they're legalizing euthanasia, they're so depressed, that which is unfortunate because you do see those deaths increasing significantly because they have no hope. They have no alternative, and it's really sad. You know, our neighbors to the north have legalized this, and we're seeing euthanasia deaths. I mean, that's just incredible. But people should have hope, especially if they're here in the United States, with world leaders in environmental protection. And this is something our polling overwhelmingly showed recently, that people don't know that we're world leaders in clean air in this country, that we've reduced pollution nearly 80%.
But the one thing that is, the part that's important to remember about that, Jason Isaac, once again, CEO and founder of American Energy Institute, former Texas state rep. What we have to remember, though, is that being clean and making and burning energy cleanly and using it properly and being as kind to the environment as possible does take a wealth of economic activity. It's difficult to do that if you're a poor country. Isn't that a truth of the energy world?
Yeah, it really is. And I say economic prosperity and environmental leadership go hand in hand. You look at places that have these, and I love to introduce myself. I tell people I'm Jason Isaac, and I live a high carbon lifestyle. And I think the rest of the world should too, because the places that do, and this is the decarbonization movement, net zero, that does nothing to mitigate a changing climate. It just makes everything more expensive. It's the climate cult Kool-Aid. But places that do utilize energy responsibly, that have economic prosperity, also have clean air. They have clean water. So the left is incredibly Malthusian in this effort. Maybe it's because they live in the
And for those that don't know, what is Malthusian? By the way, Jason, you say Malthusian. I know what it means. What does that mean, then, for people that have not heard of that term? And it's important to tuck that away because you'll see it a lot out there in the world. Malthusian.
Yeah, it's named after maybe a scientist, Malthus, and really just said that there's essentially too many humans on the planet and that we need to control population. It's a means of getting rid of people. And it's just very demonic, if you will. But Malthus is responsible for this movement that people, and not many people admit that they're Malthusian, but they will admit that, there's too many people, and we're overpopulated, and the things that we need to do.
Yeah, they love the Georgia Guidestones. Remember when those were up? They would talk about that, keep the population down. So, in other words, animals are okay because they're natural, but humans are unnatural, so they need to be killed. They're culled.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're being successful in their movement. I mean, people are dying. They're freezing to death. People are starving around the planet when there's more than enough food produced to feed more of the people that are on the planet right now. We're doing that with smaller land area, and it's because of access to affordable and reliable energy. And I tell people, and people overwhelmingly know this, I know the next Secretary of Department of Energy, Chris Wright, knows this, that the key to ending poverty on the planet is the energy that's under our feet.
Yeah. Now, is it going to be a happy dance with President Trump going in, or there's still going to be some strong headwinds to deal with lowering the cost of energy and actually producing more? What do you think?
I think we need to I think the people that were elected need to recognize there was a mandate on November 5th that people are tired of the climate hoax. They're tired of the Green New Scam. They're tired of paying more for electricity and getting nothing in return. That increase in electricity is leading to deindustrialization in the United Kingdom and in Germany, where the highest electricity rates are on the planet. Those industries aren't just shutting down. They're moving. They're moving to China in places where energy is less expensive. It would be nice if China would embrace our environmental leadership, but they don't care about the environment. They don't care about human rights. They just produce goods cheap and then put them on the open market. That's what's happening in the EV space. They're flooding the market with cheap, heavily government-subsidized and slave labor-made electric vehicles, and it's killing the American automotive. It's really killing the automotive industry everywhere.
Well, I would also add, though, that it's very difficult to get an affordable EV made here, and maybe we'll have to talk about that. But the reason I wanted to talk to you about this is that I was talking with a U.S. postal worker the other day, and she came up and she drove up in those little Cushman vehicles that have been real reliable. They've been out there forever. They're long in the tooth, okay? You know, the old Iron Duke four-cylinder engines and things like that. But it's amazing how long those have lasted, right? It is. And I said, hey, I understand you're going to be getting some new mail trucks. And it's like, yeah. And she was saying, we'll have air conditioning in the summer and heat in the winter. And a lot of times we don't have either, you know, in this one. So I understand why the Postal Service is looking to get some new vehicles. Those Cushmans have served well, but they're past their prime, all right? That being said, the big push has been to deliver electric vehicles, electric mail trucks. And what is your take on that? Because of all the places where we could use electric vehicles, mail trucks don't seem to be such a bad idea. Same routes, they do them every day. They go back to a hive each night where they can get plugged in. Maybe that would pencil. What do you think, Jason?
Well, it's interesting because they have appropriated billions of our taxpayer dollars to the United Postal Service in the intent of converting their fleet to run on electric vehicles.
Right.
They had hoped that they would have 3,000 of these vehicles delivered by this month in use at the USPS.
So they were promising 3,000 electric mail trucks. How many are actually in service?
93.
Wow.
And you're right. The people, the overwhelming response from the mail carriers that are getting to drive them is they're like, hey, they have actually air conditioning. They have heat. They're a little bit more roomier.
Yeah.
As are newer cars that weren't made in the 60s and 70s. I mean, this is the case with newer technology. It improves. And unfortunately, it's not improving at the rate it should have because the federal government is forcing this EV mandate. And automobile manufacturers are sacrificing improvements on safety and fuel economy just to meet EV requirements that are increasing the cost of internal combustion engines that you and I are paying for. It's increasing the cost of electricity, of the infrastructure the utilities are having to put in. It's astronomical how much you and I are paying for EVs, even if we're not driving them.
Yeah, let me take it back, though. So Congress, essentially, though, we have the mail department or U.S. Postal Service spending almost $10 billion to go to green mail trucks. And so they only have 93. Is it possible to cancel this? And should the Trump administration cancel this contract and say, hey, let's do something else? But the problem is, though, is that mail trucks are still going to need replaced, though. I mean, what do we do about that?
Yeah. And there is talk of President Trump canceling this order. They need to claw back some of this money that hasn't been spent. I mean, you talk about $3 billion to build 93 electric vehicles. That's an absolute, just an abuse of taxpayer dollars.
Well, that reminds me of the story a number of weeks ago in which there was all this money supposedly going in for the car chargers, billions upon billions for car chargers, and they only did a handful of those too, I believe.
Yeah, it was nice. $7.5 billion for car chargers, and they had made like 7 or 8 of them.
Boy, that must be must be a really good car charger, huh?
Yeah, really. It is.
Kind of money.
But you're right about the routing. A lot of trucking companies in the U.S. were moving towards compressed natural gas. Trucking companies that were doing the same routes like mail carriers. It makes sense. I mean, there's a U.S. Foods place not far from me. And it's right next to a natural gas fueling station. I drive by there, I see them fueling their trucks, and they're running up and down the interstate back and forth. I mean, there's school districts in Texas that are using propane on their school buses and paying less than 50 cents per gallon equivalent. That's a good use of tax dollars when you're paying 50 cents for a fuel that's 100% produced in America.
But not if you're in a system or a country, though, which is claiming that carbon dioxide is the death gas. I mean, isn't that the really challenge that you're working against this agenda?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They have convinced the population that we need to lower greenhouse gas emissions, things like CO2, this gas that's a trace gas in the atmosphere. It's 0.04% of our atmosphere. It's necessary for life on Earth. Cha-ching. There's the problem right there. It's necessary for prosperity. It's in water. I mean, are they going to go net zero H2O and start offering incentives for companies to do industrial-sized dehumidifiers?
I don't know.
I don't want to give any politics.
Don't give them any ideas. I'm sure there's some nonprofit out there that would like to grift into this. Jason Isaac, CEO, founder of American Energy Institute. Now, back on this mail truck contract, a person just asked me via messaging, wasn't that given to a defense contractor? Do you know, who was actually tasked with building 3,000 mail trucks and they've only been able to deliver fewer than 100 of these electric ones?
Oshkosh Defense was given the award of the contract to produce these next generation delivery vehicles.
So it'd be like Oshkosh by no Oshkosh, but gosh, they're not making them, right?
Okay. They are absolutely not.
Okay. So is there any problem with canceling this? And what do you think could replace it if they were to cancel it, since they're not taking delivery? They're not doing it well.
Yeah, we really need to move towards hybrid electric, towards natural gas. These are local fuels. They can be produced in America, and they're really the most efficient vehicles on the road today, either one of those. And that's where the market was going. People want hybrid electric vehicles that recharge the battery when you're pressing the brakes or decelerating. Mm-hmm. That seems to me really smart, intelligent. My background in the truck manufacturing industry, that's where we were going. But then the federal government started putting in these requirements to make electric vehicles. And they weren't just saying make electric vehicles. They're doing it through these nefarious means called the corporate average fuel economy, that you have to get to a fuel economy of 90 miles per gallon by the end of the decade.
And they fake up a number that the electric vehicle is the equivalent of 150 miles per gallon, that kind of thing, the electrical equivalent.
You know your numbers. I'm impressed. And then they give you a fake multiplier that's illegal, that bumps it up over 700 miles per gallon.
So really?
No improvement in fuel economy.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'll have to share our research with you because I'm about to update it, but it's astronomical. This illegal multiplier that the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration allows, it's created a paper trading gimmick that Bernie Madoff and Sam Bankman-Fried and Enron accounts with blush at. It's such an illegal gimmick.
I look at our local transit agency, Rogue Valley Transit, and for years they've been running these compressed natural gas transit buses, and very efficient. And they were so proud of it, they put it on the side here, powered by clean compressed natural gas. And I guess it was clean until all of a sudden we decided the carbon dioxide is killing everybody, even though every aspect of life breathes it out and or uses it. Isn't that astounding, where we've
really
gone to?
And the virtue signalers got to someone there at that transportation department and convinced them that they needed to go with electric buses, which are more than double the cost of a compressed natural gas bus, and they don't have the range that a natural gas bus has. And the charging is more expensive than the natural gas. So it is there's zero benefit. It's all cost. But the grifter's got a grift.
I suppose so. Well, I hope you're able to twist a few arms and convince some people in the incoming administration. They're certainly more friendly to producing domestic energy, that is for sure. And so it's AmericanEnergyInstitute.com. You can actually sign up and get the updates of what is going on there. You can pledge and donate. You can do all sorts of other things. And I guess help the agenda of actual energy that actually works and is available. And ultimately, do you think that this will be successful past the Trump administration, or do you believe we may be lurching back and forth depending on whether you have a Democrat or a Republican in office? What would you say to that, Jason?
I think we're moving back towards reality regardless. And I think physics and math are undefeated. What's happening in Germany and the United Kingdom are a predecessor to what could happen here in the United States, and really already is happening in California. They're trying to so-called green their grid. It is actually, it's catastrophic. Businesses are leaving California just as they are Germany, in London, Britain. They're just fleeing, and they're fleeing high cost. And so I think people are really starting to wake up and say, wait a second, what is this net zero movement all about? And does it really do anything? It doesn't do anything. It just makes everything more expensive.
It's going to be difficult to change the minds of about half the population, though. It's going to be a real challenge, don't you think?
Absolutely. I studied marketing in college. It's my passion, and I'm certainly up for the challenge. If everybody agreed, I guess I wouldn't have any work, but I look forward to doing it and doing the work with even the younger generation, because they're waking up to the reality. Like, wait a second, the leftists don't like nuclear, but we like nuclear because it doesn't emit CO2. It does emit greenhouse gases in the form of water vapor, But they're like, wait, this is supposed to be good. We've been told CO2 emissions are bad, and it's CO2 free.
Well,
why does the left hate this?
Well, because the left just wants them dead. That's why ultimately, or to, you know, go no kids, no growth, no future, no happiness, and be depressed. But we'll put you on some mind altering drugs, and you'll be fine.
You will own nothing
and be happy. Yeah, chemically induced, yeah. I guess. Hey, Jason, good talk. I appreciate getting a chance to meet you. We'll have you back. And thanks for keeping up. I'm going to sign up for the updates there, too, over at AmericanEnergyInstitute.com. We'll stay in touch. All right.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. I'll get you that EV research here soon.
All right. Looking forward to it. 829 KMED 99.3 KBXG is where you are. This is the Bill Meyer Show.
Looking for durable and custom-fit metal roof? Hey.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED. And you're waking up with the Bill Meyer Show.
770-5633. It is open phones for the rest of this hour on Wheels Up Wednesday. Anything happening on your mind? 770-5633. I was thinking about something that Michael Shaw said yesterday on the show during another segment, and he was talking about his concern that he just doesn't see a lot of the Christmas spirit, especially in the businesses here in Southern Oregon. Do you agree with that? Do you see a lot of that in retail, or is it kind of a pulling in of the horns? And do you have an opinion on why or why not this may be happening? I was thinking about that overnight, and I have my interior decorated really well. I don't have any Christmas lights outside. We have a lot of nice stuff inside the house. Linda just has it very pretty. Of course, everything has to be decatified. You know, we can't have nice things because of cats. You know, there it goes. But I wonder if one of the reasons that maybe we don't see as much of this might be the online shopping, fewer people going out as there once was. And it takes away some of that shared experience, maybe. Maybe that has something to do with it. And I'm also wondering if maybe there's not as much decorating going on, or maybe a little less of that perceived holiday spirit. The secularization of the holiday. Do you think that the secularization of the holiday may play a role? Because I think that quite often, even when it comes to Christmas music, if I had to hear, of course, I know I have Scuba Steve next door in the office next to me. If I had to hear that Mariah Carey song, All I Want for Christmas Is You, or you know, whatever it is. I know it's still one of the, it's not the number one any longer. Not the number one any longer. I think I'm just over the ho, 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 and the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer kind of stuff. And I'm more into the, oh, come all ye faithful, and the, oh, holy night. And it's like, I just feel like the secular BS version of the holiday has just gotten, you know, everything's like everything's like a Halloween decoration now. We have to have, here's the 40-foot Santa on the front yard. I don't like that. That part kind of bugs me a little bit. It's not Santa Claus. It's not Rudolph. Even though I make fun of it, it's like, nobody wants a Charlie in the box, you know, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I watch those specials. But even then, a lot of times, even in a Charlie Brown Christmas, Charlie Brown in 1964 was sitting there complaining about the commercialization of Christmas then. And here it is. You're supposed to be talking about Christmas and getting all happy, happy, ho, ho. And Costco's got the displays up in mid-September. You know, how special is it? Just saying. We can talk about that, but it's just something that went on my mind. I thought a lot about what Michael was talking about yesterday. Michael Shaw saying he was kind of concerned not seeing the spirit. I'm just wondering if that's part of it. You secularize it and you're bullsteining it up, in other words. Maybe that's what's going on. Brad's here. Hello, Brad. You wanted to talk about that, the energy guest I had on here a few minutes ago. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Bill, how's that talented, hardworking, extremely hardworking radio expert this morning?
Getting ready for a long winter's nap next week, but I'm fine. Thank you very much. What are you thinking? Huh?
You deserve it. You deserve it. Yeah, so great visit with Jason, and You know, I couldn't help but remember that, you know, this happened in February 21, and there was a gigantic downstream effect that a lot of people don't know about. There is a disproportionate amount of petrochemical production that happens in Texas, A, because they've got the, you know, their oil supply right there, and
sure.
B, because the state is very friendly toward business opportunities that process those products and make those products. So the reason that it had in my industry, in the construction industry, is so many of the materials that we use require bonding agents. So whether it's OSB board or LVL.
Now, when you say bonding agents, these are glues and adhesives, things like that, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah. So the modern world that we live in, Bill, I mean, you know, you're an expert in electronic devices, and you know how many petrochemical products are in your industry.
Tons.
Well, in our industry, we have lumber, but the lumber that we use today isn't, for the most part, is not just boards that we cut out of trees anymore. They're bonded, they're glued together products, and it's overwhelmingly the majority of the materials that we use now are manufactured materials that include bonding agents.
Are those, petrochemical products, those bonding agents?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And there's not all that many places that they're made. So when those plants went down, and of course, why did they go down? Well, they went down because their baseline electric needs were not adequate to the loads that were imposed. So, you know, they've got all these wind farms and solar farms and all of that. But when the temperature dropped below a certain level, And all these alternative sources weren't able, these plants literally froze. And so these plants that provide the bonding agents that we use in our industry, you don't just flip a switch and turn them back on again, because all of those chemicals and products literally froze through all of the machinery that makes them.
That reminds me of when I heard about what it takes to actually start up a steel plant.
God.
You know, like a steel plant,
God.
You cannot just turn the steel plant off, right? You know, those kind of things.
Right.
I didn't realize it was so complex that there are so many things that can go wrong without steady baseload power available to be able to work things all the time.
So at the exact same time, while we were trying to rebuild from the Alameda fire, remember the Alameda fire, the largest loss of residential housing in the history of the state of Oregon by fire. So here we are in Southern Oregon trying to rebuild, and at the same time, this shortage of bonding, which causes a material shortage problem, we saw the price of materials in an average 1,600 square foot home go up between $100,000 and $120,000 between April 2020 and April 2021.
I did not realize that blackout or the shutting down of the grid, the almost frying of the Texas grid had that much of an effect. I didn't realize that was that also was part of the Alameda rebuild. Thanks for clarifying that. I didn't know. But you knew.
It was unbelievably harmful. It was horrible.
Yeah. In other words, energy policy is not something to screw with. You have a 24/7 need for it, and you can't power 24/7 need with intermittent and chaotic supply, I guess, ultimately. Thank you very much. Brad, good call on that. Let me go to line 3. Good morning. Hi, this is Bill. Who's this?
Hello. Good morning, Bill. Deplorable Patrick here. Am I on?
You are on, sir. Go ahead.
Well, you're working without a net when you say call in with whatever's on your mind.
Okay.
This is not as big a subject possibly as what Brad just had, but yesterday you were talking about, and I don't remember with precise terms, something about what we put in our bodies and what we allow to affect our brains and stuff. And it reminded me of something that I would love if everybody knew about. And that is the danger of storing food in the refrigerator in aluminum pots. Have you become aware of that danger?
Well, I know that I've tried to get rid of the aluminum pots in our... We don't use aluminum pots any longer. We're doing our best not to do that because, aluminum, of course, is thought to have some generative effects when it comes to dementia and or Alzheimer's. There are a lot of theories about that right now, but you know, it's not a good idea to have it in your diet. I'm good with that, okay?
Years ago, I had a friend named Ray Carlson, and his wife, Cheryl, never would have stored food in the refrigerator in aluminum pots if she had known. But he became a terribly, terribly ill, was not able to get past it by, I guess, chelation or whatever, and he died at age 28.
Oh, my goodness.
And attributable to storing food, I guess it would matter how long it was in there, because it's got to have time to leach into the food. And he got a dose of aluminum that killed him. And I would love if everybody knew that. I don't even use aluminum foil on food.
Well, I do that, though. All right. Thanks for letting me know. That's, boy, to go at the age of 28 over the aluminum. That's a big deal. Let's go to line 4. Hi, good morning. This is Bill. Who's this?
Hi, Bill. It's Carol Ann out in the Applegate.
Carol Ann, how you doing?
I'm good. So it's Wednesday, but I have a pebble in my shoe about something you were talking about, the decorations.
Okay.
I have to pass this house going and coming, and they at Halloween they put up a huge skeleton coming out of the ground like a Nephilim, and for Christmas, and red blinking eyes. And for Christmas, they put a Santa hat on it, and a wreath on its chest, and a large candy cane.
You know, that's an example of what happens when holidays end up being taken over by the adults rather than trying to keep some innocent fun for the kids. And, I mean, Halloween now just seems to be taken over by the gore festers for that. And they take the same Halloween decoration and use it for Christmas. Lovely.
Absolutely. Hmm. And when you were talking about the music, I was thinking what you said. Play more of the beautiful songs that herald the birth of Christ. I mean, those are so beautiful any time of year. And, anyhow, I love you and have a great day.
Oh, it's very kind of you. Thank you for the call. I'll grab one more. And, you know, it's typical. I start going into an open phone call and I'm late for everything, but that's all right. We'll manage to live. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
This is Father Dave, or Dave Plus, as you sometimes call me.
Yeah, Dave Plus. How are you?
I was wishing that Chip Davis had gone a little farther with his explanation of how Christmas came about.
The thing is, though, those vignettes from Mannheim Steamroller, they're only like 60 seconds, so he's got to squeeze a lot in there. But add into it. Add your take.
There's another reason for that. It's the summer solstice. I mean, the winter solstice is December 25th. The days start getting longer. That was the perfect time for the birth of Christ, who is the light of the world. Because as the days get longer, the light is coming back into the world, and we're heading to springtime.
Was there a pagan kind of merging of the sacred and the pagan? You know, kind of.
They wanted to take over, the church wanted to take over the pagan holidays. Mm-hmm. What they did was they turned them all into Christian holidays instead to keep the holidays, because people had really nothing else to look forward to than the festivals in those days.
Yeah, well, so it wasn't exactly like there wasn't Netflix then, right? You know?
Right, exactly. Exactly. So, as the light, because Christ is the light of the world, so the winter solstice, that time of year, was the perfect time to celebrate his coming, because the light was coming back. The days were getting longer. The spring was heading. I think the movie The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe did a very good job of expressing that. You saw that all of a sudden spring came when Christ came back into the world, who was the lion. You saw the snow starting to melt, and all the leaves were starting to come back into greenery.
Boy, you know something, Reverend David LaBarbera, once again. I can almost hear your voice breaking up, on this. It really affects you then, right?
Well, I get very emotional about our Lord. So. I don't know why I do it. I just do.
Well, you're in the right line of work then, for crying out loud. Okay.
Well, you know, and then on the decorations too, I have a problem with the commercialization of Christmas. In my church, I just set up a nativity scene, and I have a star hanging in the window, just one lone star hanging in the window of the church. to celebrate Christmas.
Thank you for sharing this. I really appreciate your call, Reverend. Be well.
All right, Bill. Take care and have a Merry Christmas.
Have a Merry Christmas for you too, and blessings. We all need those, that's for sure. It's 8:46. If you're on hold, I will get right to your call. It's open phones for the rest of this hour here. 770-5633.
The Artisan Bakery Cafe is the place for festive indulgence. Treat yourself to their cream-filled egg.
The Bill Myers Show is on. News Talk 106.3 KMED.
You know what I've always wondered about that International Star Registry? When they name a star, do the scientists then refer to the star as that name? Like, you know, if P. Diddy, I know he's in trouble and all sorts of things. You know, that's P. Diddy's star, you know, that sort of thing. Do the scientists call it P. Diddy's star? I don't know. I can't believe people actually do this, but oh well. 770-5633, 770-KBD. Let me go to Lauren. Hey, Lauren, how are you doing this morning? You wanted to talk about, once again, Christmas and the decorations and the music and so much more. Go ahead.
Yeah. When you were talking about earlier, my first thought was, I think it's the wokeism that's taken over.
You think so?
You're not allowed to broadcast Christianity because there are other people that aren't Christians, and so don't talk about Christmas. But you can sure talk about anti-Christmas stuff. And
you could also talk about Halloween. I mean, to me,
that's
one of the biggest signs to me here, Lauren, of corrosion of culture was Halloween being recognized as probably the most popular Halloween or the most popular holiday of the year. And I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me. But that's true. You know, that's the way it's looking.
Yeah. And like you say, all the one lady came on and talked, all the skeletons and all that. I just really, really despise that. My front yard, I've got several different Christian displays. I've got some wooden picture, statues, so to speak, of Joseph and Mary.
Uh-huh.
I've got, so that my goal is to say Merry Christmas to whoever I talk to, and they kind of look at me like, oh, are you saying that for real?
But, they're still doing that. As do I, and I imagine many people are doing that now. And when the folks who are in the drive-thrus or in the stores are saying Happy Holidays, we'll say, yes, Merry Christmas. And then they kind of, you'll see how some of them are going like, yeah. But I have a feeling that they're still being told by the higher-ups, don't say Christmas, if you can help it.
That's the scary part. Yeah, that's that being played down so much by parts of our culture. And yet the church and Christian faith, we have our holiday and we have the birth of the Christ child. And that's our privilege.
Yeah. Don't say Christmas, though. But on the other hand, I'm sure there are people that would say, boy, you better say Happy Juneteenth. Juneteenth, or what's another example that would be? You realize it's National LGBTQ Month. You better be celebrating, you know, that kind of thing.
That is my complaint, too. Exactly. I hate those things.
All right. Lauren, thanks for that. You're in the right business, too, for that matter, okay? Appreciate the call. 770-5633. Francine's here. Francine, what are you thinking?
Yeah. Well, okay, the solstice does not fall on the 25th of December. It falls on the 21st, sometimes on the 22nd.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Also in our modern calendar, too.
Well, yes, that's true. And since this is what we're using and working with, I think we kind of have to go with it. But no disrespect to the Reverend, of course. I just wanted to mention that. And then another thing I wanted to mention is, you know, everybody's getting upset over, you know, other people's displays and whatever. And sometimes, admittedly, they are in poor taste.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to understand that these are a reflection of the people that put them up. And in some cases, all they're doing is outing themselves. So we can know who they are.
That's pretty funny when you think about it. I think part of it, though, is I have a lot of libertarian leanings, right? Okay, I've admitted this, although I think that the Libertarian Party, libertarianism is not an effective governing force, but I can understand parts of the philosophy being very, very appealing. But there has been this push for almost more of like a hyper-individuality in what we, hey, man, I'm going to do what I say. And it's like, no, wait a minute. You know, this is a shared country. This is a shared culture. And it's okay to have standards. And frankly, it's okay for us to criticize your butt when you're out of line.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Just like they can put their bad tastings up and we can criticize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the whole idea, I think, that we should all be able to express ourselves as we want, considering that's what they're going for anyways.
All right. Thanks for the call, Francine. 856. This is the Bill Meyer Show.
At Father and...
Couple of other stories wanted to just mention briefly here. Trump suing the Des Moines Register, top pollster, for brazen election interference. Big fan of President Trump. I don't think this is a good thing. All right. Concentrate on making America great, Don. I get concerned when you have people trying to make the case that putting out a poll 3 days before an election is election interference, because I could see this just as easily. What, is someone going to sue me for election interference if I show a poll that shows something that even if they're bad or they're wrong about it? I mean, to me, just leave that be. But we'll see where that ends up going. And meanwhile, Liz Cheney accused of tampering with a January 6th witness, the GOP recommending an investigation, facing calls from GOP legislators that the FBI investigate her for potential criminal witness tampering regarding her role on the January 6th House Select Committee. Of course, there was a lot of report, a lot of corruption in that sort of situation. Get the popcorn. I think now we know why there's calls for pardoning some more of these people from the Biden administration. We'll talk more tomorrow, okay?